This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number two. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Tonight, the Jets and the Devils, a 6 o'clock puck drop. We are part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com. In slightly under 3 hours from now, Erik Karlsson will make his return to Ottawa as a member of the San Jose Sharks. We're pleased to welcome to the program from TSN 1200 in Ottawa, Ian Mendez. Ian, good morning and thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, you betcha, anytime.
Ian, obviously it's going to be a bit of a monumental day in the nation's capital as Karlsson makes his return. Not the first time we've seen this happen in Ottawa. We remember Daniel Alfredsson coming back to Ottawa as a member of the Detroit Red Wings. Now Karlsson gets his chance as a member of the San Jose Sharks. What is the feeling, what is the attitude in Ottawa preparing for this afternoon's return of Erik Karlsson?
It's funny you mention that. It's actually 5 years to the day that Daniel Alfredsson made his return here as a member of the Red Wings. So it's a little bit of, you'll forgive Sens fans if they got a case of deja vu that their old Swedish captain is coming back wearing different colors. But it's going to be interesting, I think, this afternoon, because I imagine that the majority of the public is on the side of Erik Karlsson here. They feel like this organization, and I think their ups and downs, and certainly the downs, have been pretty well documented in the last 12 months. The loss of Erik Karlsson, of all the things that have happened to the Senators, and they've kind of become a punchline for hockey fans around North America, the loss of Erik Karlsson is the one that stings the most, because that's the one where you can say, man, that's the face of your franchise, and when he's playing at his best, he's in the conversation of one of the best 5 or 10 players in the game. And to lose him under the circumstances in which you did, in which you didn't have to move him, you thought you could get a window to get him signed, I think there's going to be a lot of people coming to the game today cheering Erik Karlsson whenever he touches the puck, and it's almost going to be as much as a message to the Senators that, we're really disappointed in the way you've conducted yourselves in the last 12 months as anything else.
So, Ian, today's game is going to be all about Erik Karlsson returning to Ottawa, and you were there when he met with the local media, and Karlsson was talking about how he was just focused on the game, and the Sharks are coming off of a pretty bad loss to the Toronto Maple Leafs, 5-3, and Karlsson himself was struggling offensively earlier in the season. Now he's starting to put up some decent offensive numbers, but in your opinion, is this a player that is focused on the task at hand? You hear Logan Couture talking about that this Sharks team really, isn't at the point where they can be a Stanley Cup contender. Is Karlsson, to you, a player right now that's just focused on winning the game and not necessarily focused on, all the pomp and circumstance that we're going to see in Ottawa?
Yeah, and I think, it's interesting because he did say yesterday, I don't know how I'm going to handle it. This has never happened before, and he's going to try and treat it like it's a regular game. But I was really interested by exactly the comment that you highlighted there, the Logan Couture comment, which was, man, we're not playing very well. We're not at our best. And I guess if you're a San Jose Sharks fan or a player, you can at least look at that and say, okay, well, we're kind of right in the playoff picture right now. They're holding on to a playoff spot, but not by a ton. And you can say to yourself, okay, well, we haven't hit our peak yet. And I think Erik Karlsson is the perfect sort of illustration of that in that you look at his numbers. I think he's 8th on the team in scoring, and he's a minus player. You're not accustomed to seeing that out of Erik Karlsson. You're used to seeing him as one of the top 2 or 3 scorers on the team. You're used to seeing him logging 27 minutes a night. All the numbers are down, and I think there's been an adjustment period. So I think if you're Karlsson and you come into this game today, it is going to be a tough one because I think you want to put on a show. I think if you ask any player, and I'm sure Evander Kane felt this way going back to Buffalo the other day, and Erik Karlsson's dealing with this today, and then you go through the list of players when they go back to their old town, you want to put on a show. And the problem for Erik Karlsson is he hasn't put on very many shows in the teal so far this season. So I think it's going to be a fascinating afternoon where he's going to have to probably try to manage his emotions, try not to do too much, but at the same time, he's probably got money on the board, and these guys, Couture and Pavelski and Thornton and Burns and Hurdle and Kane, they all know what this means for Erik Karlsson, and I think they all know if they can all deliver a win for Erik today, that would probably go a long way in maybe sort of instilling a little bit of confidence into to number 65.
And Ian, just for Drew, that when Ian says teal, that's the color in the Sharks jersey.
thank you, Ezra. I appreciate you helping me out with that. Ian Mendez is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the return of Erik Karlsson to Ottawa this afternoon as the Sharks and the Senators will do battle.
You know, Ian, it's easy to focus on the negative in the nation's capital, but you also have to look at some of the positives, and one of those is the play of Thomas Chabot. I mean, he's leading all defensemen right now in points. Just how nice has he been for the Ottawa Senators fans the season that he's had so far?
Yeah, it's really funny that if you were looking at the stats right now and you blocked out the names and you looked at the numbers, you would think that that's Erik Karlsson, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you look at Ottawa and show, there's a defenseman second on the team in scoring, and I think he's 11th or 12th in the entire league in scoring. You'd say, oh, there's Erik Karlsson, and it's not. It's Thomas Chabot. And I think you're right. It's been an awful year of negativity swirling around the Senators, and they do have a couple of really bright spots, and Thomas Chabot is at the top of the list. So I think a lot of us were wondering, when they lost Erik Karlsson, would they be able to generate any offense on the back end? It felt like everything ran through Karlsson, that he was on the ice for, like I said, almost half the game, and he was a guy that was generating a ton of scoring chances. Well, you take him out of the mix, and you're like, uh-oh, are they going to be able to do anything? Well, ironically enough, their defense, at least from an offensive perspective, has been unbelievable, and it's been led by Chabot. So the irony is, I would argue that on the ice, this team isn't missing Erik Karlsson as much as we thought they would. I thought that they would be struggling with the power play and struggling to transition the puck. And in fact, they're still in the top five. I didn't check after last night's games, but I think they're still in the top five in the league in goals scored. And I don't think anybody saw that coming without Karlsson. So to be able to have Chabot run the show, run the power play, play 20-plus minutes, and right now he's right there with Morgan Rielly in terms of top-scoring defensemen, I think it is a huge, huge sigh of relief for the Ottawa Senators, who are potentially worried about having to fill the skates of Erik Karlsson.
Ian Mendez, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ian covers the Ottawa Senators. He's a radio host on our sister station in Ottawa, TSN 1200. Ian, another blow to the ownership of Eugene Melnyk earlier this week, or maybe late last week, with the announcement and then the subsequent lawsuit that basically the LeBreton Flats partnership that he's involved in has fallen apart. You know, what does this do in terms of the hopes of getting a new downtown arena in Ottawa? And is this another blow to the contentious relationship between Melnyk and the fans of the Ottawa Senators?
Yeah, 100% it is. 100% it is. And I'm awfully pessimistic about a downtown arena as it stands right now with Eugene Melnyk as the owner. And that's not me trying to be caught up in the negativity or being overly pessimistic. I think it's sadly pessimism and realism have sort of overlapped here. And if you're being a realist, you would say that this doesn't look good. I think, you know, just to sort of try and give you a Coles Notes version of what happened is the government here said, okay, you guys, Eugene Melnyk and your partner, you guys are having a bit of a problem here getting things together. We're going to give you 6 weeks to get your act together. The next day, guys, Eugene Melnyk sued his partner. The next day. Like, can you imagine that? Imagine you've been told by a government entity, okay, guys, you got 6 weeks to get your house in order. And on day one, you sue your partner. That's it. Like, I don't know why we're bothering to go through the charade here of waiting the 6 weeks. It was over. The minute that lawsuit got served, that was the end of it for me. So I think we're in a situation now where I don't know what happens. I think we got to wait till the middle of January now for this deadline to pass, and then it's kind of back to the drawing board. It's really disappointing because there's a real appetite for it here. There's an appetite to move downtown. There's an appetite to have a new look to the team, and we were so close to having it happen, and now it just feels like, I don't even know what to say, but it really feels like we're back to square one where we were maybe 3 years ago.
You know, Ian, when the late Brian Murray was still with us, it seemed like he was able to keep some of Eugene Melnyk's eccentricities, out of the spotlight. Are the Senators lacking in that sort of strong central leadership voice in the organization, which has maybe helped lead to some of the dysfunction that has now been on display, especially in the last 6 months or a year?
Yes and no. Like, yes, for sure. Like, they need, absolutely, unequivocally, they need a voice in this community that people can trust. That a voice that can calm the masses, just like you said, like Brian Murray did. That's what you need. You need somebody who can do it. where I'll argue a little bit, and I've brought this up too in this market, is, you know, people say, "Why Brian Murray was the one who was able to sort of keep Eugene Melnyk at bay," and like you said, I think the term you used was, you know, kind of mask his eccentricities. Well, I'll argue that, you know, even in Brian Murray's time here, like Daniel Alfredson left, there was lots of turmoil. Danny Heatley left. There was a ton of instability. You went through a carousel of coaches. Like, I would say that the better part of 10 years, the one thing that they've lacked is stability and consistency. And I don't know that that is something that's going to change. I think that that is something that has to change, but I don't know that it will. I think Eugene Melnyk is the guy that he is, and he likes to run the show. And if they get into a situation where you get a strong voice in this community that people trust, I think that would go a long way. The question is, would Eugene be willing to sort of step aside and let somebody else completely run the show? I don't know. I don't know that he's wired that way. And hey, listen, it's his team. He can run it the way he wants. But at the same time, at some point, you would think he looks at the bottom line and says, "Okay, this isn't working. What could we do to change things up?" But you're right. I think if they had that strong voice in there, I think that could, and I don't know who that voice would be, but somebody that right now, there's an inherent lack of trust from this community towards the team. And I don't know that that's going to be solved at any point in the near future.
You know, Ian, sticking with that, you know, we talked about Thomas Chabot earlier, and he's having a great season. Brady Tkachuk, 2018 first-round pick, he's having a nice start to the season. You've got Colin White up with the big club now, Alex Fermentin, Logan Brown, who's playing in the American Hockey League, Jacob Bernard-Docker in his rookie season with the University of North Dakota. Even though this has been a really tough last 365 days for the Senators, do you get the feeling that a lot of Sen fans believe that there is light at the end of the tunnel with all of these good young players in the system?
You know, okay, and so here, and those prospects you listed are fantastic. They really are. You feel like this is going the right way. Here's the kicker, and this is why I think nobody can truly enjoy this season in Ottawa, is they don't own their own first round pick coming up. And if, you know, if they did, guys, if they had their own first round pick, that now Colorado owns as a result of the Duchesne deal, if they owned it, I think people in this market would be a lot more at ease. They say, "Okay, you know what? Let's have fun this year. It's a rebuilding year, and if we finish in 22nd place or 28th place, wherever we finish, it's cool. Like, we're having fun. We're watching Brady Tkachuk and Thomas Chabot and Matthewson. Let's have some fun. We got our own pick." Well, you don't, and you don't have Matt Duchesne signed. And today's December 1st, guys. Like, isn't that odd that we're at December 1st? Matt Duchesne hasn't signed. You have no first-round pick coming up, and that would be absolutely, positively catastrophic if you get to in and around the trade deadline and you haven't signed him and the market for him isn't what you think it is, and all of a sudden you're left holding the bag. And so for all of these great young prospects they have, that's the one thing where people in this market will say, I just wish that we owned our own first-round pick in a year that we were rebuilding. And maybe they can get one. Maybe if they trade Duchesne or Stone or Ryan Dezingle, they can get one. But without one right now, there's still a sense of we're not quite where we need to be in a rebuild.
Ian, has Pierre Dorion just thought of asking Joe Sakic for the draft pick back?
I think, you know, like, words are everything, right? Like, what if he asks super nice, like, really nicely? Like, hey, what if I could just have that pick back? How good is Joe Sakic feeling right now, though, guys? Like, you got, well, I mean, I know they got to re-up Rantanen, but can you imagine you've got that terrific team, that core, and you have somebody else's first-round pick that could end up being in the top three or four or five or whatever? Like what a stroke of genius that deal was for Joe Sakic, who, remember, right around this time, when they hung on to him for so long, Duchesne, and everyone said, "Oh, my God, get it over with." He played that perfectly, and maybe that's what Pierre Dorion is hoping to do with Matt Duchesne, is the longer you drag it out, maybe in some way you get a little bit more leverage.
Ian Mendez covers the Ottawa Senators. He's also a radio host at our sister station in Ottawa, TSN 1200. Ian, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Really appreciate your time and insight.
Ian, we pried you away from the big show.
Yeah, I know. I usually do that. So Tuesdays, I think I do it with those guys. So,
well, now you can start a little bit of a civil war here at TSN 1290.
Yeah, hey guys, anytime you need me, just let me know.
Thanks, Ian. Take care. When we come back, we talk about Logan Couture's comments about his San Jose Sharks and their recent struggles. We'll also give you an update from the Winnipeg Jets game day skate in New Jersey. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity. Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Well, I think we can. You don't think we could compete with those guys tonight? I mean, they went 3-for-4 in the power play. That was the story of the game. I think.
Well, let me rephrase that. But where you are competing with everyone on a night-to-night basis.
I think we are doing that. I mean, we just played two of the best teams in the league. So I would disagree with you. I think we're competing with everybody. You know, we've got to find a way to win games. We've got to find a way to put it all together. But, you know, I think for large portions of games, we're competing just fine.
The San Jose Sharks were a popular Stanley Cup favorite to start the season. Their struggles continue and continued this week as they lost to the Toronto Maple Leafs. They're, of course, in action this afternoon in Ottawa. But the Sharks down to 12-9-5 on the season. Fortunately for them, they play in the pretty terrible Pacific Division, so they're still in a playoff spot, but things are not great right now in San Jose. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 10 minutes before the top of the hour, and this segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, two shows featuring Ron Jossel. It's his last night in town after two fantastic weeks, 7:15 and 10 p.m. Very few tickets remaining for both shows, is my understanding. Get them quickly. Get them now. RumorsComedyClub.com. Quick update from Winnipeg Jets game day skate before we start talking about the San Jose Sharks. Seems like they're going with the same six defensemen that they did Thursday, as there's no sign of Joe Morrow on the ice, according to our buddy Ted Wyman, who you heard from in hour number one. So it seems like Sammy Niku and Cam Schilling are still going to be in the Winnipeg Jets lineup tonight as they face off against the New Jersey Devils. Yes, Dave?
No, and Jason Bell from the Free Press also added that Joe Morrow is on the trip but not skating.
On the trip but not skating, so the Jets...
And Kulikov's there as well, wearing a yellow non-contact.
Kulikov on the trip wearing a yellow non-contact, but Andrew Kopp seems likely to return to the Winnipeg Jets lineup as he's skating in a... You've got no restrictions on him during game day skate. We'll hear from Jets coach Paul Maurice coming up, at least in the third hour. We'll know...
Require the Jets to make a move, I believe, right? Wouldn't that put them over? 23 now? So wouldn't
yeah, well,
the
I assume that you just put Bufflin on IR.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's
you
right.
put Bufflin
right.
on IR to
no,
call it even at
You're
that
right.
point
they
in
did
time.
Already.
Yeah, so there you go. So Andrew Kopp seems like he'll return to the lineup. So you'll see a bit of a shuffle on the Jets forward groups for tonight's game in New Jersey. But the defense seems like it's going to stay the same. As I mentioned, the San Jose Sharks struggling as of late. Logan Couture didn't pull any punches when asked about it after Wednesday's game against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Here's his quote. My personal opinion, I don't think we're close. We show spurts and signs that we're capable of playing with the best in the league, but we haven't put together an effort against a top quality team. We got to figure it out soon. I'm a believer that it takes time, but I'm a believer that it doesn't take 26 games, so we need to figure it out. Your thoughts on Logan Couture's comments, highly critical of his performance, highly critical of his teammates for a team that a lot of people expected to be a Stanley Cup favorite this season.
Yeah, are they not still a Stanley Cup favorite? I mean, you just mentioned it. They're not playing well right now, Drew. They've lost four of their last five games, but you know, if you've watched the Sharks in any of those last five games, you know, obviously they got smoked by Vegas. That was a very embarrassing defeat at the hands of the Vegas Golden Knights. That was just last Saturday. But when you're talking about, you know, two of those losses were in overtime. So they've got points in three of their last five games. But overall, the Sharks expected to be further ahead than they are now, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were expecting to be first place in the division. When you acquire Erik Karlsson, you don't acquire Karlsson to help you get into the playoffs. You acquire Erik Karlsson to put you over the top, right? We know how good that defense is with Karlsson and Burns and Vlasic and Justin Braun. And, you know, it's not like they're not having individual success. I mean, Logan Couture is having a good start to the season. He's been a consistent player for them. Pavelski, I think, has 16 goals. He only has four assists, so maybe he's trying to compete with Laine for the Cy Young. But, you know, Brent Burns has had a good start to the season. Erik Karlsson, obviously, you know, was struggling offensively offensively early in the season. But, I mean, this is a team that has been inconsistent. And as far as the comments go, I mean, Couture's always been a very outspoken player.
Honest, certainly.
Honest, and he's one of the leaders of that team, along with, you know, Pavelski, Thornton, and Burns, and Vlasic. And, you know, it doesn't surprise me because, you know, these guys have professional pride. Dave, I mean, you lose 6-0 to the Vegas Golden Knights. By the way, the Golden Knights just keep winning.
Yeah.
So the Golden Knights,
they're
are
back.
They're right up there, right? It's the Flames, the Sharks, and the Golden Knights. As far as I'm concerned, this is the most top-heavy division in the NHL.
You left off the Anaheim Ducks, who are actually also in second place in the Pacific.
Yeah, but I mean, how much of that is John Gibson?
All of that is
John
Gibson.
But you're right. I mean, you're right, though, Drew. I mean, Anaheim is up there. But to me, I mean, those are the three teams I picked to be in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously Edmonton was the other. We'll see what happens with that. But Vegas, Calgary, and San Jose are definitely the three teams you expect to be in the hunt all year. But, you know, you expect Logan Couture to be unhappy when you've lost four of your last five games, right?
Mm-hmm.
You,
five of the last seven, yeah. They're struggling.
Right. So you expect that in a way. Now, did you expect him to maybe go that far? He seems like a very frustrated player. And, you know, Joe Thornton has obviously been back in the lineup now for about a month, and he's playing on that line, that third line with Marcus Sorensen. I actually think they've had really good chemistry together. So, I mean, just based on this team, you know, the skill that they have, on paper, Dave, I mean, this team should win the Pacific Division, or at the very least, you know, they should be second place in the Pacific Division, in my opinion. And come playoff time, I mean, why shouldn't we expect this team to go back to the Stanley Cup Final? The NHL is completely wide open this year. They went to the Stanley Cup Final a few years back against the Pittsburgh Penguins. And, I mean, you look at the defense. Martin Jones is an excellent goaltender. I mean, there's no reason to think that they can't compete for that Western Conference crown. I mean, Nashville, Winnipeg. I mean, there's other teams that are in the mix, obviously. But, I mean, right now, you know, it shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody that Couture is frustrated. Because you look at Couture. He's been in the league for, what, 10 years now? He's never won the Stanley Cup. I mean, they've had really good teams now for pretty much since he's come into the NHL.
They got to one Stanley Cup final where they lost in six games to the Penguins.
Right, so when you're talking about Couture, Pavelski, Joe Thornton, you know, is towards the end of his career, Brent Burns, I mean, even Erik Karlsson is a veteran of, you know, what, 10 NHL seasons now. So, I mean, these are guys that they want to get their game to an elite level, and it's still early in the season. I think they will put it together. I mean, they're going to go on a run. They'll go on a winning streak, but, you know, it hasn't been the best start, best quarter mark of the season.
You know, his comments reminded me of something you'd hear out of a Matthew Perreault. I mean, and they're actually refreshing. I like when players are honest and candid in that regard, and they're generally not throwing their teammates under the bus. They include themselves, you know, and usually that is allowing, you know, gives you some, you know, a little bit of ability to do that because you're not throwing everybody under the bus.
Sure.
You're talking about it as a collective team effort, which obviously it is. And the fact is, I agree with that. I think this is a function of a team that's a veteran team, has an expectation. The lucky thing for them is the Pacific Division is generally pretty terrible. So the fact is that they're going to be able to, you know, coast essentially into the playoffs. Now, no team wants to do that. You want to keep playing, making sure your game is at a high level. But the truth is, in this instance, I think it's as long as you're able to kind of maintain that position, you're fine because you can then take it to the next level. Now, you don't want to start trying to take it to the next level, you know, 10 games before the playoffs begin. You want to have things figured out in the mid part of the season.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I don't think it's doom and gloom necessarily in San Jose to the degree. I think what you're hearing from that player is just a lot of frustration based on what's happening currently.
What do you think about the head coach saying, no, I think we're close. We're closer than you're giving us credit for. Meanwhile, Couture is saying we're not close at all. Sort of a disparity in comments between the two.
Yeah, and you expect that out of Pete DeBoer. He's obviously, you know, he's obviously got to show, you know, a strong face,
mm-hmm.
right? He can't go in front of the microphone. That's not his style either. Pete DeBoer is a great coach, by the way. I mean, I really like what he did with New Jersey. I like what he did in the Ontario Hockey League. So, I mean, I'd expect that. If that's what you're asking, I'm not surprised.
You're not surprised that there's two sides of the coin.
That's just the way Pete DeBoer is, right? He's fairly soft-spoken, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be interesting to see if the San Jose Sharks are able to turn it around and get back to where people expected them, which is towards the top of the Western Conference. Of course, they're in action later on this afternoon against the Ottawa Senators, the Erik Karlsson homecoming game. When we come back, Dave Maloney is going to join us. He's an analyst on New York Rangers broadcasts. The Jets are playing the Rangers tomorrow after tonight's game against the Devils. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on Birchwood Nissan Infinity. Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show up now here on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity. Winnipeg Jets game day, the Jets and the Devils tonight from New Jersey, 6 o'clock puck drop, and we can report now that Mason Appleton is going to be making his NHL debut for the Winnipeg Jets tonight, so a bit of a shuffle in the Jets lineup. We're not sure who's out, but we expect Andrew Kopp is in. He seemed to be healthy. Mason Appleton says he's in as well. So a little bit of some roster juggling for the Winnipeg Jets up front. Alongside Dave Minuchin, Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program New York Rangers analyst Dave Maloney. The Rangers are into Montreal tonight to play the Habs. Dave, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to chit-chat a little bit. And, of course, next on the deck for the Rangers, of course, will be the Jets on tomorrow night. So it should be an interesting contest also. They're going to honor Vic Hadfield, one of the great Rangers. They're going to put his number 11 up in the Raptors. So it should be a good night, hopefully by a good hockey game.
Yes, that's something certainly to hope for. Dave, obviously the Rangers didn't come into the season with tremendous expectations, but I would suggest that right now, being in the second wild card spot, they've probably exceeded most people's expectations, given that it was thought to be a more of a rebuilding season than anything else on Broadway.
Yeah, and certainly they're not the only team that I think at the quarter pole has exceeded expectations. I think you could put Montreal, Ottawa, early Vancouver. But it's a long season. I don't think the long-term agenda from a Ranger franchise hasn't really changed. I think they're in it to kind of build to be cup contenders, not to kind of sneak in on that second wild card spot. But in the meantime, the coach David Quinn just met with the media here in Montreal and was asked about where he thought the franchise was. And he said, listen, we're here to win every game we can. And from a coach's and a player's perspective, that's exactly how you've got to go into every game. And by and large, the Rangers have been in every game. They're coming off a bit of a clunker against Ottawa. But I would look for them to regroup here tonight and be a little more competitive.
Dave, I wanted to ask you about Kevin Hayes. He's in the last year of his current deal with the Rangers, and you know there have been a lot of rumors that he's going to be traded. Winnipeg was actually mentioned as a possible destination for Hayes, but as you know, trade rumors happen all the time, but he's actually playing some really good hockey as of late. Right. How have you seen Hayes dealing with his contract situation and all of those rumors floating around? I imagine he tries not to really pay attention to any of them.
Yeah, I mean, the thing for Kevin was, so the contract he's on was a one-year deal that was agreed upon this offseason, and I think that process kind of took him back a half a step. I think he really, like most players, when you get to your virgin franchise, that's where you think you're going to play the rest of your life, right? And I think it was a little disconcerting that it didn't go quite to his expectation, and I know he fought through a not a very good training camp, but on the 24-5 games that have been played this season, he and Mika Zibanejad have been the best two forwards. So he's managed to shut things out. I think there's still a hope or whatever. He can work out a contract deal to stay in New York. But I think the issue with Kevin moving forward from a Ranger perspective is really the term of a deal. And if he is willing to engage in something that maybe not quite as long-term as what he would expect or maybe what he would get somewhere else, that, I think, is the issue from a Ranger standpoint. So, you know, we're still away from the deadline and different things like that, but he sure hasn't hurt himself. Somewhere he's going to get, whether it's here, whether it's wherever, he's going to get himself a nice deal, and he's been a pretty good player. And you know, when you look at an Edmonton team or a Winnipeg team, I'm not, you know, if you go Shifley, who you got? You got Shifley, Little, down the middle, Lowry. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure where he would fit there, but he certainly is a quality NHL player.
You know, Dave, the Rangers have been very good at home, but on the road they've struggled. What do you attribute that to?
No, it's funny. I was just talking to a couple of guys this morning, and we all agreed, talking to Brady Shea and Neil Pionk, and that was the thing, that their goal is to get better on the roll, and if it was easy to pinpoint, you'd fix it, right? I mean, I think one of the issues may be this is a fairly young group that tends to get a little more rattled, particularly when you're on the road, and that may be it. I mean, but I don't think I see anything, fundamental with their game that between road and home. And I just think perhaps it's one of those things. It's just another part of growing together as a franchise and figuring out what you've got to do to get things done when it kind of turns against you. So they are, like, we started the conversation about the state of the franchise, and this franchise last February made a decisive move to think that they're going to try and build to be a long-term cup contender, and that's not any different. And inherent with that is sometimes the youth is a little more difficult to find a way to win on the road.
Dave Maloney is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave is a New York Rangers analyst. You're listening to TSN 1290. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day. And Dave, anytime there's a young team that's sort of going through the rebuilding process, it's got to be comforting knowing you have a quality goaltender behind players who might be more prone to mistakes than veteran guys. How is Henrik Lundqvist sort of handling this transition of the Rangers from being a perennial playoff team and maybe even a perennial Stanley Cup contender to being a team that's going through the rebuilding process?
He's been great. I mean, the Ranger franchise is not competitive without the goaltending it's gotten. And Georgiev will get the start tonight. He's been good also. His numbers don't quite show as good, but they're a little bit skewed. He got blown out in Carolina's first start of the year, but the goaltending has been great. And Lundqvist, when you look at any team, if you've got your top players buying into what you're trying to sell, you're going to have a better chance. And Lundqvist from the get-go doesn't want to go anywhere, hasn't changed how competitive he is. He's become a little more patient with what he sees in front of him. And so there's no question. I mean, those of us, I actually started doing this full-time the first year of Henrik's career, back to 05-06, and been fortunate to have a goaltending that you know what you're getting 95% of the time, and it's 95% of his game. And there are very few goaltenders. I know Hellebuck's having a bit of a struggle, looks like, numbers-wise. A lot of the things start and end with what you get in goaltending. And this franchise has been absolutely blessed with world-class goaltending for 13 years, and rue the day that Henrik Lundqvist will move on.
Dave, Matt Zuccarello's currently out of the lineup. He's dealing with that groin injury. Mm-hmm. He's not going to play tonight, and he's most likely not going to play tomorrow versus the Jets. How close is Zuccarello to returning to the lineup?
Not close by all accounts. I mean, if he was that close, I think he'd be here. On this trip, we were in Ottawa on Thursday, and that's the only way that I can say is that if he's not traveling with the team and not skating with the team, then I don't think he's very close. And, from Rangers, a little bit of a struggle scoring. You take him out of the lineup, you take Buchnevich out of the lineup with a broken thumb, and you take Nemestikov out of the lineup, who's in concussion protocol. With those three guys gone on this roster, two of the three for sure top six players, and you're going to be different. And Zuke has certainly been a good player, but by all feel and all sense, I don't think he's very close to be coming back.
Dave, sorry, I just wanted to ask you, I mean, we talked about Kevin Hayes, and, he's in the last year of his contract. Same thing goes for Matt Zuccarello, mm-hmm. And I'm not going to ask you to speculate on the future of Matt Zuccarello, but how tough do you think that is for him personally in the last year of his contract to be missing all these games?
Well, it's got to be, it's got to be tough, right? I mean, what he knows what he, outside of a contract, what he wants to be doing and what he's good at doing at this particular stage of his life is to play this game. And when you're not in the lineup due to injury, regardless of what year you are in the contract, it's got to be disappointing, right? I mean, he's going to get, whether it's here, moving forward, or a little bit like Kevin Hayes, he's going to get a contract somewhere. The guy's a hell of a player. So, I think there are on a twofold kind of observation. The Rangers, aren't quite as good with him out of the lineup. And, you know, he's certainly disappointed not to be in the lineup. So, you know, that being said, I mean, at that particular stage of your life, what you think you're good at and what you need to do is to go play, and Zuccarello is not playing.
You know, Dave, how unusual was it to see Brendan Smith jump from defense up to the right wing and play right wing for the Rangers? As you just touched on, they had a number of injuries over the last few days.
Well, listen, that was a one-game experiment. I don't think that's going to happen again. Tony D'Angelo is out of the lineup tonight. So they'll go with 60. They called Vinny Letteri back up, so he'll slot in that fourth right wing spot. So I don't suspect it'll happen again. Apparently he did play a little bit up, played forward in, Detroit. But if you've got to play Brendan Smith, as a forward, you're really searching for answers.
Dave Maloney is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave, last question for you. David Quinn, mm-hmm. of course, is the Rangers head coach. He comes from the NCAA, mm-hmm. the NCAA ranks, where he led Boston University for 5 seasons. What has been his biggest strength so far in his first NHL head coaching stint?
Well, there's a couple of things. Although he's coming off 5 years at BU, he did have some pro experience with the Colorado franchise. Mm-hmm. And although he's 51, he has a wonderful touch with the millennials, that generation now that is becoming more and more dominant in the league. His communications, he certainly is expectant. And if you're not doing what you need to do to be good, you're not going to play. And so everybody's been held accountable. But the way he goes about his business is quite different. He barks, but he doesn't bite, right? He communicates, he talks. A really good example, on game days in Manhattan, he takes both Philip Hedel and Brett Howden out to breakfast, right? And then you'll see him extended conversations with Mika Zibanejad, extended conversations with Henrik Lundqvist. So coming out of a regime that was led by Alain Vigneault, who certainly has had numerous success, not ultimate success in the NHL, but he was a more distant, not nearly as communicative as Quinn is. So everyone's style is different. But he seems to be the perfect guy for where this franchise is right now. They're not long of a tooth. You don't have, outside of Hendrick, who's made a lot of money for a lot of time, you don't have a lot of guys in that situation. You know, the core seems to be buying in Mark Stahl. So when asked over the 25 games in training camp, my thought is he's the perfect coach for where this franchise is at a particular stage of their development.
Dave Maloney is a New York Rangers analyst. He joins us from Montreal, where the Rangers and the Habs will do battle later tonight before the Jets and the Rangers square off at Madison Square Garden,
Dave,
tomorrow
evening. Can you pick us up some Schwartz's?
Some which?
It's a Montreal deli.
Schwartz's deli in Montreal.
He's from New York. There's better delis in New York than there are in Montreal.
Or Carnegie Deli?
Yeah, right. I mean, there's numbers of Rubens. There's a number of places, right? There's Dunn's and different places. But I'm not sure when we're out in Winnipeg, we're close to being out there. I certainly trying to facilitate your orders, but it might be a little long and stale.
No, Dave, when you're in Winnipeg next, we'll take you to Bernstein's Deli for an Illegal Curve sandwich. We have our own sandwich at that deli.
All right, that's a date. I'll hit you guys up on that one. That'd be good.
Thanks, Dave. Take care.
All right. Always a pleasure, fellas. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Dave. You too. Take care. When we come back, a little bit of a significant update from Jets head coach Paul Maurice.
There is a lot happening right now.
We'll give it to you next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity, Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Devils will do battle at 6 o'clock tonight from New Jersey. And here's an update regarding the Winnipeg Jets.
Nelson Nogé has been freed.
Yeah, that's actually the only player I think you haven't tweeted a hashtag free XX, and it was Nelson Nogé, yeah. I think, is the only one you didn't tweet.
Yeah, I had a little free Declan Chisholm.
Yeah, you had a little too much time on your hands, is clear, is what was evident to anybody who follows you on Twitter. Nick Pitan and Brendan Lemieux are the scratches for tonight's game for the Jets. Mason Appleton and Andrew Copp are back in the Jets lineup. Joe Morrow has been placed on IR and is out week to week with a lower body injury. Nelson Noje has been called up from the Manitoba Moose. The Moose played last night in San Diego. They play tonight in Bakersfield. So that's going to be a significant travel day for Nelson Noje. Obviously, he's not going to be in the lineup tonight, but he is the extra healthy defenseman if something were to happen to a defenseman.
Yeah, and we should mention, as Dave mentioned, Dmitry Kulikov is on the road trip. He's practicing with the Jets in a non-contact jersey.
He is in a non-contact jersey.
But he's not an option, but he is on the trip.
In terms of lines for tonight's game, the TLC line, to no one's surprise, gets reunited. Adam Lowry, Brandon Tanev, and Andrew Copp will all play together. Mason Appleton will play with Jack Roslovic and Matthew Perreault on what will be the Jets' fourth line. Dave, did Appleton and Roslovic, did they play a lot together last year for the Moose?
Yeah.
I mean,
once Roslovic got recalled for when Scheifele went down in late December, that lineup was broken up. But I'm actually a little surprised that Pitan wasn't left in, because I thought if you have Pitan, Appleton, and Roslovic, you know what you ended up having? A really good fourth line. Obviously, you're not going to leave him in over Perreault, so obviously Copp is healthy. But when those three were together with the Moose last year, I tweeted this out, the Moose went 10-0-0-1 and outscored, the team stat, but outscored their opponents 55-15.
The Jets' fourth line would be the Moose's first line.
Yes.
Last year.
That's right.
Right?
So yeah.
Certainly the case. And in goal tonight for the Winnipeg Jets is Lauren Brossois, which means, of course, Connor Hellebuck will likely get the start tomorrow night as the Jets play in New York against the Rangers. So Brossois in net, Copp and Appleton back into the Winnipeg Jets lineup, and Nelson Noje called up from the Moose as Joe Morrow is placed on IR, and Nick Pitan and Brendan Lemieux, the healthy scratches. So certainly a busy day at Winnipeg Jets game day skate in New Jersey. Sorry, Dave, you were going to say something?
No, I was just going to say, it's a very curious move from my perspective. I mean, if you're the organization and you say to the media after the skate yesterday that you will know more about Joe Morrow's status, and I understand that you're leaving later that day for New Jersey, but you'll know more about Joe Morrow's status. Well, then why did Nelson Noje play last night in San Diego?
Unless Morrow had a setback. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, that's the only thing that would really make sense, because otherwise it's a little curious of a move. If you're expecting a guy, you don't want a guy, Nelson Noje could have been hurt. Now, Nelson Noje, to his credit, has been playing better and better. I mean, you got to remember, Nelson Noje, Jets fans may recall that name, obviously. He played 10 games a few years back when the Jets' back end was decimated with injury.
2 years ago.
Yeah, and so he had 10 games. And then last year, in the first preseason game for the Manitoba Moose in Grand Forks, he was injured in the boards, had to have surgery, was out for 90% of the season, came back at the end. You know, obviously, that's basically a lost season for a young player who's developing. So, really tough situation for him. He's played 20 games now for the Moose. And he's been okay. He's been developing slowly along, as he kind of gets back his confidence, playing a regular role, having more expectation. We're going to have Mitch on in a little bit who can talk about that.
Yeah, Mitch
more,
Peacock coming up at the bottom of the hour.
But I watched the game on Thursday night that Nelson played in San Diego. That was the first game. The Moose won 5-1 over the Gulls, and I actually thought he was very good. So it's not a surprise. People were asking me who would be the first guy recalled. I actually thought it would be Nelson Noje based on the history and based on the way he's been playing of late.
Can we go back to Mason Appleton? I mean, this is such a great story, right? He was AHL Rookie of the Year last year.
Mm-hmm.
This is a sixth round pick, from the 2015 draft. And he's been a point-of-game player for the Moose. Dave can tell you all about how well Appleton has played. And every time I've watched him play, he's been very impressive. But, we thought that if Andrew Copp wasn't ready to go, then maybe Appleton would get into the lineup. But Copp is ready to go, and Paul Maurice is still putting Appleton in there. So it's really nice to see a guy get rewarded for how well he's played in the American Hockey League. And obviously, Nick Pitan and Brendan Lemieux have struggled, unfortunately, a little bit on that fourth line. But I just think it's a great story because, we've had Mason Appleton on the show before. He's a great kid and, late draft pick, Dave. And, he's been one of those late round steals for the Jets. Decided to forego his third year at Michigan State University. And he's, I think, one of those great stories amongst a number of great stories, great players that the Jets have drafted and developed.
Well, let's hear from Mason Appleton. He met with the assembled media. I think he was speaking with Dennis Bayak as well just after the Jets game day skate in Jersey. Here's Mason Appleton on getting his first taste of NHL action.
into them more than, you know. So I got the systems down and those things. Obviously pretty similar to what we do at the Moose, but there's still a couple changes. But, you know, I've got that in my head now, so I'm excited to make it my debut.
How important is it that the Moose plays the same system or similar systems to the Jets in your development and for this opportunity?
Oh, it helps a ton. You know, makes the transition way easier. You know, if you play different systems, it'd be really hard to, you know, come up and make an impact and, you know, play fast because you're always thinking. So it's going to be pretty simple for me. You know, not use my brain a ton, just, you know, play simple, play smart, and, you know, let my legs get into it and have the game take over from there.
Have you had enough time to let family and friends know about this opportunity?
No, not yet. So I will in about 5 minutes here, yeah.
Did you have the chat with the coach?
Yeah, he pulled me out of the locker room right after the meeting and said I was playing tonight. And, you know, it's a talk of just keep it simple and it's your first game, so really enjoy it. You know, you're not going to sign a 10-year deal after tonight or you're not going to get caught, hopefully. So, yeah, just going to go make the most of it.
What is your game? Describe your game.
You know, pretty simple straight line game. I, you know, like to play with a lot of energy and pride myself in battles and those types of things. And, you know, I'll get to the net. You know, I'm not worried about the score sheet or things like that, you know, being in my first game. But, you know, I'm just going to play a simple, fast game. And, yeah.
Has your game progressed maybe faster than you thought? You've gone from being a rookie in the A, winning the American Hockey League Rookie of the Year, to now making your NHL debut?
Maybe a little bit. You know, I'm always a confident player. I think that I always succeed at the level where I'm at, you know, no matter how long it takes. But I've shown that throughout my development path. And, you know, with this being my first game, you know, you can't put a timetable on when you expect to play your first NHL game. But, you know, I'm grateful for the opportunity. I'm going to go make the most of it.
We talked to Pascal, and he mentioned this earlier in the year. It was a bit of a slow start for you, and then just really have taken off. Do you even feel that yourself?
You know, maybe a little bit. It's beginning of the year, you know, you're always feeling out things, and it's a bit of a process, but yeah, I think my legs are one thing that I always pride myself in, and that's really important for my game. And, you know, I wasn't playing as fast as I needed to early on, and I'm pretty good at evaluating myself and how I'm playing, so I made that adjustment early, and from there kind of hit the ground running again.
But you've obviously, this has got to be an exciting time for you, and I missed that first part, sorry.
Yeah, very exciting. Haven't had a chance to really tell family yet, but, you know, I'm sure they'll be excited too. So, yeah, first game, obviously something you dream of. So I'm going to go make the most of the opportunity.
That's Winnipeg Jets forward Mason Appleton making his NHL debut later on tonight as the Jets and the Devils will do battle at 6 o'clock puck drop here on TSN Radio 1290.
Drew, do you think Mason would have time to get some friends and family out to New Jersey for this game?
It would certainly be a...
They're coming from Eau Claire and Green Bay and various parts of Wisconsin, so...
It would be a bit of a rush, but, you know, maybe, I don't... You can maybe boot it to Chicago real quick and jump on a...
Maybe Milwaukee's got that direct New York flight.
They might. I mean, you know, it's... It would be difficult, but I'm sure he's trying his darndest to get them there as quickly as possible. But at the very least, you'd expect them to be there... I would think Mason Appleton gets more than just today. I would assume he'll be in the lineup tomorrow for the Jets as well, barring an injury. So they could get, maybe if they don't get to Jersey in time for tonight, they can see him at Madison Square Garden tomorrow night in game number 2 of his NHL career.
We have some other breaking news coming out. The Canadians have placed forward Nikita Sherbak on waivers.
Is that really breaking news for anybody?
Anyways.
Even Nikita Sherbak is like, that's not breaking news.
No, but you know what? Just getting back to this whole Appleton story. I mean, and again, you know, it's fun to have watched this kid's journey because last year at the beginning of the season when we talked to him, his goal was to make the Manitoba Moose. That was it. Sure. Literally, his goal was just, I want to play on the Moose. He started on the fourth line. So for the first, I want to say, 3 or 4 games, he played on that Manitoba Moose fourth line. He eventually earned his way up into a top role position. I touched on it earlier. Like, the fact is that him, Rozovic, and Patan were simply dominant, the three of them. He's been really good this year for the Manitoba Moose. Him and Michael Spacek seem to have magic whenever they're in OT together. So, you know, he's a player who really deserves it. His game has continued to improve. He seemed a little disappointed when after training camp, you know, he got sent down. And that's not unexpected. But, you know, he's had a good attitude from everything I've been told from the organization and from what I've seen on the ice. So a very good effort for a good kid.
The Jets' fourth line is desperately waiting for somebody to grab a spot there. I mean, you've gone through Lemieux. You've gone through Patan. Roslovic has struggled, but he's been, you know, the best of an average bunch.
Free
so,
Marco Dano.
Somebody can come in and grab that spot as a regular on the Jets' fourth line, and now it's Mason Appleton's opportunity to do so.
Boys, how busy is Zinger these days? The Moose just recalled Cam McLeese from the Jacksonville Icemen. They signed Jack Lover to a PTO yesterday. I mean, with you got to think about this, right? Like all these guys that are getting called up by the Jets, the Moose have to replace these guys.
I thought I was going to get the calls of maybe playing defense, even though I've never played defense in my life.
You never made it past center ice in the Maccabi Hockey League. You were the prototypical cherry picker if there
true.
Ever was
one. I think
one.
Dave actually scored 5 goals in a game.
6, no big deal.
Yeah, well, you never go past center. It's easy to score 6 goals in a game.
That is true.
Front page of the Jewish Post for this guy.
It was a slow news day, clearly. When we come back, Manitoba Moose broadcaster Mitch Peacock is going to join us from Bakersfield.
That's good timing.
That is very good timing, where the Moose will be in action. So we'll talk to Mitch about all the Moose players who've been called up to become Jets players on this road trip. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to be joined by Manitoba Moose broadcaster Mitch Peacock. The Moose on a California road trip, losing last night in San Diego after defeating the Gulls on Wednesday night. They're in action tonight in Bakersfield to play the Condors. And Mitch, it'll be a slightly different team for the Moose than we saw last night with the news of the call-up of Nelson Noje to the Jets, given the injury troubles the Jets are having. And of course, Mason Appleton having been with the Jets on the road trip so far.
Well, another day, another tweak to the roster for the Manitoba Moose and for the Winnipeg Jets, and that's just how it goes in this business, isn't it? You get into the season and the games pile up, and it seems like the bumps and bruises pile up right along with it. So more of the same in some ways for the Moose and for Pascal Vincent and his staff, and it's been interesting to watch how they manage it. It's almost like you hear the football team saying, next man up, and the system remains the same. Everybody's asked to do a job, and the coaches talk about how players and agents are constantly pushing for opportunities. Well, players are getting opportunities in times like these, and it makes for good watching.
Mitch, we have a lot of players to ask you about, so I'm not going to get too excited. But, you know, Nelson Noje, he gets the big call-up. You know, he's played 21 games for the Moose this year. He's in his third year with the Moose, played 10 games for the Jets a couple of years ago. How has he looked to you this year, and how nice is it for Noje to get a call-up? I'm sure it was a little bit unexpected for him.
Yeah, I would say it probably was unexpected. I had a chance to have a pretty good conversation with Nelson just a couple of days ago as this trip got going, and he admitted, and I hope I'm not talking out of school by saying this, but he admitted that coming into the season, he felt a pressure to try and make up for lost time, having suffered that major injury in the preseason last year and missing almost all of the year. He just thought that he had to come in and kind of play like a guy who'd gotten all of the experience of last year, even though he was a guy who didn't get those reps in and didn't have that time on the ice. And he said it was, you know, kind of a distraction, that he ended up thinking too much and trying too hard. And when you do that, as you guys know, you slow your play down, your timing is off, you're not as effective as you can be, and it's not a lot of fun. So he had said that, you know, in recent weeks, the focus had gotten back to just being patient, just playing as hard as he can, learning the lessons that he can and the time that he's putting in, and not making it such a, you know, not such a threatening thing to try and be a pro hockey player, but just to enjoy the process. And I think the people who watch him closely can see that he's been playing more freely in recent games. Big kid, strong kid, smart guy, can skate, has a little bit of experience up there. He knows where he's at. He knows that you know, he's got a lot of developing to do. But he's grateful for an organization that's giving him the chance to grow, and I'm sure he's excited to get up there and hang around with the big boys.
You know, Mitch, I've got about a million Moose questions based on just the first two games of this California road trip. But, you know, of course, we have to ask you about Mason Appleton. I mean, such a good kid off the ice, and he's been such an effective player for the Manitoba Moose on the ice, considering where he started last season to where he is right now, making his NHL debut. What can you say about Mason Appleton?
Well, what I can say about Mason is this is a guy who is all business. I mean, he is focused, he is consistent, he is dedicated, he's determined. He knows what he does well. He brings that on a very regular basis. He's got the offensive upside that we've seen in the AHL. Not sure exactly how that translates to the NHL, but I have a real confidence in Mason's ability to go out and, as the coaches like to say, run his routes. This is a guy who knows what the team wants and what the team needs from him, and I think we'll be able to deliver it. I thought in the preseason he was better than a lot of people felt, although he was disappointed with his preseason to some extent. And I think if he's honest, he'll tell you that maybe he was pressing a bit too hard, too, coming off the season that he had, thinking that he had to jump in there and be something different because of the fact he had so much success last year. But we've seen it with the Moose. You watch it on a regular basis, Dave. You're around all the time. This guy works. He cares. He's got ability. He's bright. He can produce points. And I think he can do a job at that level. And I'm really curious to see how this plays out because I think there's a very good player there that maybe some people outside the organization aren't aware of.
Mitch Peacock is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mitch joins us from Bakersfield, where the Moose will be in action tonight against the Condors. Mitch, last night in San Diego was a bit of a rough and tumble affair between the Moose and the Gulls.
Old-time hockey.
Yeah, over 100 minutes of penalties. Your thoughts, I guess, on the Moose first two games of this road trip and last night's old-school hockey game, as he referred to it, between the Moose and the Gulls.
Yeah, I thought that Wednesday's game, the first game of the road trip, was extraordinary from the Moose. In fact, Pascal Vincent said on the pregame show last night, you may have heard it, that he thought that the start they had on Wednesday is now the model start for their team. If they ever want to discuss how to begin a hockey game, how all four lines can get in the swing of things, how all three sets of D can get in the swing of things, if they ever want to go and say, what do we need to do to start a game well, they'll be going back to the game Wednesday against San Diego. They played with an intensity, with a drive, with a purpose, but with a responsibility as well. And it just seemed like San Diego had no answers. And then, they weren't able to get a goal to break through until late in the first period when they got the power play goal. And boy, did they need a power play goal. They hadn't had one on the road all season long. And it just seemed to be a just reward for all the good things that they were doing over the course of that first part of that first period. And then came out in the second period and got another power play goal straight away. And when San Diego had their push, as you knew they would, Eric Comrie was very, very good in that game, especially in the second period. And then they went on to cruise to the 5-1 win, just losing the shutout in the final 18 seconds. But Pascal said, there's no doubt about it. That's the template now. It's almost like Claude Noel used to say, now that I've seen you do that, you know what the standard is. He would say that to individuals when they had a good game. And I know that's how Pascal sees Wednesday's game. Last night's game was also an interesting game, and I think a kind of a game that they'll point to as well, in the sense that they knew that San Diego was going to come out. San Diego was bitter after that game on Wednesday. They got played off their own ice in front of a good crowd, and they weren't going to do it again, and the Dallas Aikens team wasn't going to allow that to happen again. And I thought that the Moose handled it pretty well. They were outshot one-sidedly in the first period, but it was a bit misleading, I felt. There were some power plays for San Diego. A lot of the shots came from the perimeter. Eric didn't look overly threatened in the first period. And I thought that, it was maybe tough for San Diego to stomach that they'd come out with their push and it was 1-1. And so I think that led to some of the nastiness in that second period when it ended up with 72 minutes and penalties in that period alone and three scraps. And I'll be honest, it's not my kind of hockey. I thought it slowed the game down. I thought the officials were slow in getting the game started again. I thought it was strange, some of the players on the San Diego side that were fighting. It was some of their upper scorers in their lineup. So they say that there's two things that get people to stand up. It's fights and goals. I personally prefer the goals. But, San Diego felt that they had to make a statement of some kind. And I thought the Moose answered the bell very well and gave themselves a chance to win the game. And they'll be disappointed to lose it on a shorthanded goal late because all they ask of themselves is to play the right way to give themselves a chance to win a hockey game late. And they did that only to slip up in the last few minutes.
Well, Mitch, you previously mentioned Eric Comrie, and we've talked about Comrie with you many times over the years. He's an excellent goaltender, but is what he's been doing lately even more impressive considering all the turnover on the back end? I mean, Sammy Niku up with the Jets, Cam Schilling up with the Jets, Tucker Poolman is out of the lineup, Nelson Nogé has been called up. How important is it to know that Comrie is always going to be solid back there, regardless of who's in front of him.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you ask about Eric, because Eric and I get along really well, and we'll often talk in and around the rink. And after the game last night, I ran into him outside of the dressing room, and you know, just told him, tough one, you know, had a good game, and all he wanted to talk about was how he'd given up the goal late and they'd lost. He was disappointed that he had been beaten on the 2-on-1 shorthanded, and felt that he could have made the save and that the team could have got something from the game. So when you hear Pascal Vincent talking about Eric Comrie as a leader, that's what he's talking about. I mean, he was a star in that game last night. He was spectacular, especially in the second period, and was named the star in the game. That was his 9th start in the last 10 games. There's no question about it. When San Diego was pushing in the second, they could have really pulled away. Same could have been said on Wednesday night. If they'd got a couple of goals to go in the second period, they'd have flipped the script in that one and maybe taken that game from the Moose. So Eric Comrie, I think, has been really, really good. And as you point out, in particular, with the roster being changed the way that it has, it's a point of pride for him now that he's the number 3 goalie in the organization, that he's the clear-cut number 1 for the Moose. The organization wants him to have that responsibility. He wants the responsibility. And I think he's really grabbed onto it and is taking it, you know, as a personal challenge. This is a critical year for him. You know, guys, as well as anybody else, he's on a 1-year contract here. And he doesn't want people to forget about him. And he's playing like a guy who has a game that's worth watching.
You know, Mitch, in terms of a longer-term development path, the opportunity is there. And you talked about it with Coach Vincent in your pregame about how players are now having that chance. And one player, unexpectedly, I think, is Logan Stanley. And Logan Stanley now is playing top-pairing minutes. Even guys like Jacob Cederholm getting the recall from Jacksonville, getting an opportunity to play with Logan Stanley last night. I mean, what can it mean for their long-term development to be getting this kind of opportunity this early in their careers?
Well, you always want to be careful with opportunity, right, Dave? Because sometimes it comes too soon and the player loses confidence and you know, starts to doubt what their abilities are because they get overwhelmed a little bit. And sometimes, you know, it's like a good student. You give them a little extra work and a little extra responsibility and they gobble it up and you know, you can see the learning take place. And in the case of Logan Stanley, I just continue to be impressed by what he's doing. And I want to be careful here because I don't want to, you know, stoke some sort of mania or hysteria about Logan Stanley, you know, going to win the Norris Trophy next year. all I want to say here is that this player, whatever they've given him, he's taken. And whatever he's taken, he's handled well. And now you've got a guy who's playing in his first year of pro and is barely, you know, a number of weeks into the season here. He's playing top-pairing minutes. He's playing power play. He's killing penalties. He's playing the other team's best players. He's a plus in terms of plus-minus on a team that has a negative goal differential. He's got a little bit of offense there, and you can see there's probably more in that. He's stood up to some guys on the other teams that you wouldn't think a first-year player would do. He knows that at 6'7", people are going to target him. He just responds back with, you know, whatever he can offer, and people aren't taking advantage of him from a physical standpoint. So I think if you're giving out an interim report card on Logan Stanley, there'd be very high marks on that page because he just doesn't seem to be skipping a beat here. And it's all built around simplicity for me. There's nothing fancy about what he does. It's very, very basic, but it's very consistent. It's rock steady. And they have to be thrilled with what they've seen to this point. I know Pascal Vincent has talked about it a couple of times in our broadcast that just, you know, they don't want to get too excited. They don't want to get too geared up about the player. But what they're saying is just that whatever they've asked him to do, it's been pretty smoothly handled.
So, Mitch, was there any, you know, consideration of you going into the broadcast booth of Andy Zilch and duking it out with him in the second intermission after all those fighting majors that we saw in that second period?
There were a couple of glances, I'll be honest. there's a plexiglass divider there, though, so, you know, they're aware these kinds of things can boil over.
Mitch, just know that you have, you know, that Illegal Curve has your back.
I was looking for you. That's why I didn't do anything.
Yeah. Yeah. We have your back all the way from Winnipeg when you're in San Diego. That's how tough
we'll
we are.
We'll get on a plane.
Yeah, discretion, the better part of valor.
Too much.
Mitch Peacock is the Manitoba Moose broadcaster. The Moose are in action tonight in Bakersfield. It's a broadcast you can hear live, of course, on TSN Radio 1290 and moosehockey.com. We'll join it in progress after the Jets Devils post-game show here on the station. Mitch,
it's great to hear you back on 1290.
Absolutely. Welcome back, Mitch. We missed you for a couple weeks there.
Oh, thank you guys very much. I appreciate that, and always fun to be with you. Do a great job.
Take care, Mitch. Thanks again. The Moose in action, like I said, in Bakersfield tonight after the Jets-Devils game here on the station. When we come back, 4 hours and 13 minutes until the end, thank God, of the William Nylander saga with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
It kind of is the Michael Nylander saga, too. Yeah, he's living vicariously through his son.
He's doing something all right. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets and your home of the Moose, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
There's lots of opinion out there. Let's not confuse opinion and facts. We think Willie's going to be here, and we think Willie's going to be here for a long time, and we think he's going to be a career Leaf. That's what we think. No, that's what we believe.
Toronto Maple Leafs head coach Mike Babcock, that might be what he believes, but that's his opinion. The fact right now is that William Nylander remains unsigned, and given that it is December the 1st, if he does not sign by 4 p.m. Central Time, he will not be eligible to play in the NHL this season.
Do you think Mike Babcock was wearing his Bab socks while he gave that interview?
I don't know. How's that licorice that you're chewing on air? Is it good licorice? And, you know, you couldn't stuff that in your mouth before you come back from break?
You were having some off
air. Off air is the operative word there. Off air, not on air while you're talking about Mike Babcock's socks. Dave, considering he's still eating the licorice, I'll turn to you for your opinion regarding what's going to happen with William Nylander, the Toronto Maple Leafs, and today's 4 p.m. Central Time deadline.
Put me in when the North End Rick, I don't care category. Although I guess that doesn't work when you're doing a radio segment on William Nylander.
It makes for a lot of dead air is what happens if you just say I don't care.
No, I mean, like, we've been talking about it. It feels like, thankfully on our show, we don't really focus on it, but I can only imagine the drama that it's been creating out east in Toronto. But no, I mean, I think it's a function of this has been a very good Toronto team all season long without him. They've managed to win. You know, I think if he's not going to be wearing a Leafs jersey this year, maybe not ever again, then if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs and you have an opportunity to win it all, maybe you need to trade him for some sort of defenseman to help that augment that roster.
Dave, you got to think that a trade isn't coming. And Bob McKenzie talked about it on TSN 1050 yesterday. I know we have another clip to play of Bob McKenzie. Hopefully we can get that in. But, you know, he basically says that, you know, he thinks it's 95% that he's going to sign with the Leafs. And you'd think that, you know, he would have been traded by now. And you have to think that it's going to be a 3-year deal or a 6-year deal. And the reason why it's not going to be a 4 or 5 year deal is because if it's a 3-year deal, then that takes him to UFA status.
Yeah.
And the feeling all along in Toronto has been that he wants a 6-year deal worth roughly $7 to $7.5 million a year, slightly above David Pastrnak, Nikolaj Ehlers money.
Mm-hmm.
And I would expect it to be similar to Bob McKenzie. I mean, there's a reason why they call him the Bob Father. I mean, he's plugged in. He knows way more than I do. So you have to think that Nylander is going to sign here. I just think if they were going to trade him, it would have happened by now.
You know, Bob McKenzie ran through sort of the three different scenarios that he expected to happen. The first scenario was that he signs some sort of contract with the Leafs, and he said that's his favorite in the clubhouse. That's what he thinks is most likely to happen. Then the second one that he thought was most likely to happen was that, you know, he skips the whole year. He doesn't sign in the NHL. Presumably he'd sign.
And then he goes plays in Sweden.
Presumably he signs a big contract for 1 year overseas in Europe, and he plays hockey there.
Yeah.
The third option, or the KHL. You know, over in Europe somewhere. The third option, I want to run this one past you, is...
Russia's not in Europe.
Russia is considered Europe.
Is it?
Yes.
It's not Asia?
Well, it entails both, I would imagine.
I mean, I imagine some portions of Russia might fall into Asia, but
there's a big portion of it.
Right, but I think most people think of Russia, they do think of it as in Europe as opposed to...
I think they think of it as Eurasian.
Okay, now that the geography show is over here...
I just think of Russia as Russia. I don't really think of it as Europe.
Because it is the largest land, you know, the land mass, largest country still in the
Russia.
World.
Right.
What's it? You say in Russia it's the largest country? That's very clever, Dave. But let me run this suggestion past you about a trade. And people saying, well, the reason the trade's not going to happen is because the cap hit for somebody to sign Nylander on a one-year deal, which is upwards of over $9 million because it's the prorated amount for this season. What happens if you're a team, say you're the Los Angeles Kings, and you acquire William Nylander? You don't really care. You're so bad this year. You don't really care if he plays for your team this year or not. You maintain his rights.
I don't know if they have the cap space, though, Drew.
Well, if you don't have to sign him, you just get his rights. You tank the year. You're already tanking the year, like the Sabres did when they acquired Evander Kane. Why can't you acquire an injured player, acquire a player who's not going to play for you?
Well, that's the whole point. That's why we said that this saga technically isn't over by December 1st. The whole point is that this can go right until the trade deadline.
Well, because conceivably, the whole point is, if a team is willing to, what I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying. I agree with you, Drew. I think that it's a function of teams can, up until the end of February, take a guy on.
They can do it
the
after that.
It doesn't matter if he doesn't play for them.
I see what you're saying, Drew, but let's say you're going to give up a defenseman.
Sure.
Right? Let's say it's Alec Martinez or Jake Muzzin. I'm not saying that Rob Blake wants to trade one of those two guys.
But
he's obviously not trading Drew Doughty.
Clearly not. But
so
let's
it's going to be a guy like Muzzin or Martinez. Okay?
Let's use those guys.
So if you're giving up a defenseman and a draft pick,
and
we've heard that Toronto wants a draft pick, a high draft pick, and probably two players. Are you going to give up Muzzin, a draft pick, and another player just to get the rights to a guy?
Well,
I mean, I realize what you're saying. They're gonna be bad. I mean, it's lose for Hughes for sure in L.A., but are you going to give up all of that just to get him for next year?
Oh, I don't think you're giving up more than Muzzin, and I would suggest whatever Toronto wants, I mean, is irrelevant. But let's say the Kings come with an offer of Muzzin and a second-round pick and a fourth-round pick or something. For Nylander, you don't care about this year if you're the Kings. You're not going anywhere.
Yeah, but the return for a first-round pick that had 61 points last year, I mean, that's a horrible return for him.
From the Leafs' perspective, what you're saying.
I mean, you got to get more than that for Nylander.
Well, then then maybe Philadelphia is being talked about. Maybe I'm just saying that the salary cap issue about the fact that there's not very many teams who can get him under the cap for this season at the $9.5 million cap charge if he signs a $7 million multi-year deal. Maybe that's not such a big deal if a team just wants to acquire his rights and figure out the contract at a later date and time.
I just think that would have happened by now, and that's why I really believe that Nylander is going to sign with the Leafs, and then this whole drama is going to be over with.
You think that he signs in the next 4 hours and 4 minutes then?
Yes.
Okay, well, it'll be interesting. I mean, it's somewhat amazing that it's...
I really can't believe that this has gone on this
long. That's what I was going
to
say.
I really thought he would have signed, sometime in mid to late October.
It's brilliant. I mean, he's managed to avoid all these months of hockey. He's going to be so fresh.
Except he hasn't been paid for anything as well, though.
Well, I think he's in for quite a little payday.
He's been saving his money. In any event, it really is going to be, it's going to be an interesting 4 hours. I don't know what's happening in Toronto, but I'm sure they're going absolutely apoplectic at this point in time.
I suspect the local fans here are going to be caring about one thing, the Jets and the Moose.
The Jets in action tonight against the Devils, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290, and then the Moose in action in Bakersfield. You can hear that joined in progress here on the station. That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to all of our guests for joining us. In case you missed any of the broadcast, it will be available on tsn1290.ca, on our website, illegalcurve.com, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Get it sent to your device automatically each and every week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jersey. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean Asor, doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuke, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.